1001 Songs is the greatest songs of all time, and the artists and the stories and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley-Jones, and I'm here for another week. Oh, yes, that's right. Now, I think I said last week and the week before that and the week before that about how Toby Cresswell and him saying, and I just said Toby Cresswell twice, three times, something like that. But the thing is it Toby Cresswell, right? He wasn't writing the song to... He wasn't writing this book to say the 1001 greatest songs of all time. He was writing this book to say, you know, the most influential songs of the 20th century, more or less, you know. He also said something about how much he couldn't stand John Lennon's Imagine, but how, even though that was in there, he said some of these songs are truly awful, but each of these songs will broaden your artistic repertoire and palette or something like that. I'm not sure, because I couldn't be bothered turning all these pages to the bit where it says that. But having said that, I've found... I'm on the page right now, and it says... Janis Joplin, Little Girl Blue, which was written by Lawrence Hart and Richard Rodgers. Richard Rodgers, of course, you might remember from the Rodgers and Hammerstein, wrote the music for various wonderful things such as The Sound of Music, you know, The King and I. And he didn't do My Fair Lady, he did, you know, but, you know, that type of thing. But anyway, this is Janis Joplin doing him with Little Girl Blue. Appears on I Got Them Old Cosmic Blues Again, Mama. Joplin takes her cues from this Nina Simone's arrangement of the song from the musical Jumbo. Oh, it is from a musical. Told you, you know, Richard Rodgers, everything. The song was written for a middle-aged character reflecting on her life, but Joplin, barely in her mid-20s, sings the song with a lifetime of experience in her voice. Sam Andrews' guitar has a beautiful counterpoint to Janis' melody line, and producer Gabriel Mechler dresses the song with a gorgeous strings and organ parts. They're just so gorgeous. Just say gorgeous in here, Mr. Cresswell. He didn't really strike me as the gorgeous type. But I don't know. I'm sort of making personal judgments about him. I really hope I never meet him. I mean, he'd probably sue me. But, anyway, next sentence, wherever it is, Joplin was a singer that usually went for the epic emotion and the big note, but here she hangs back in total control. Joplin noted only discards Lorenz Hart's first verse, but many of the other lines as well, and twists the syntax to make the song an autobiography. Even though the delivery is measured, there is a raw quality here. Joplin's opening up her heart, and the disappointment and pain and rejection and confusion, which was so much a part of her short life, is there for all to see in Janis Joplin's Little Girl Blue.
Sit there. Count your fingers. What else? What else is there to do? Don't you know it's time? Because you got to know that all you ever gonna have to count on are gonna wanna lean on. It's gonna feel just like those raindrops do when they're falling down.
And listen to the guitar line on that. That is Janis Joplin and Little Girl Blue. Little Girl Blue, of course, was originally written for the musical Jumbo by Lawrence Hart and Richard Rodgers. And this next track is Suicide by Frankie Teardrop. Frankie Teardrop by Suicide. Either way, it's fairly grim. Now, Alan Vega and Martin Rev started Suicide in 1971 in New York, playing the downtown circuit with Vega singing and Rev playing primitive synthesizers and drum machines. Suicide took the Stooges and the Velvet Underground and some Elvis Presley and Otis Redding, and then reinterpreted it as if they were Kraftwerk. In fact, I think we've got a Kraftwerk track coming up here, so... Oh, not tonight, but it is relatively soon, a few weeks at the most. Unless you've already had it. Oh dear, my mind is elsewhere. Well, it isn't. It's right here. It just doesn't really exist in the first place. It's fairly bit of a non-entity. Yeah. Anyway, I suppose I'll just keep reading. Yeah, when I find my place. They were rightly regarded as the true pioneers when punk rock moved above ground in 1976-77. Suicide surfaced with it. The Clash and Elvis Costello both added Suicide to their tours and caused riots at their concerts. The world was not yet ready for industrial techno. Suicide's ears, Devo, Ultravox, Depeche Mode, Jesus and Mary Chain, the Sisters of Mercy, Daft Punk, Air Chemical, Nick Cave, to name but a few, benefited from the pioneering sheets of industrial music. The 70s certainly weren't ready for Frankie Teardrop, an epic 10-minute song about a man trapped in a factory. Rev's keyboards are angry and agitated and frustrated, and the desperate and Vega's singing walks the line between despair and madness until the song ends in violent tragedy. That's what's happening all over the place, said Vega. Everybody's blowing out everybody else around. Who are these people? They're not maniacs, they're just ordinary people who got a little berserk because life is just too hard for them. Frankie Teardrop is so hard in the way that Velvet's Sister Ray is hard. The key to it is that amongst Vega's screams and crooning is a pumping heart. It's not a song you're going to want to hear a lot, but it will stay with you. I can testify to that. It's not a song I would want to hear a lot either, because it is actually quite disturbing. And I mean, I wouldn't describe myself as the most squeamish of people, but you decide. You let the song say itself. The 10-minute song.
Frankie Teardrop, 20-year-old Frankie, He's married, he's got a kid. And he's working in a factory. He's working from 7 to 5. He's just trying to survive. Well, let's hear it for Frankie. Frankie, Frankie. Frankie can't make it, 'cause things are just too hard. Frankie can't make enough money. Frankie can't buy enough food. And Frankie's getting evicted. Here for Frankie. Oh, Frankie, Frankie. Oh, Frankie, Frankie. Desperate. He's gonna kill his wife and kid. Frankie's gonna kill his kid. Pointed at the 6-month-old kid in the crib. Oh, Frankie. Frankie, look at his wife. Shut up. Oh, what have I done? Let's hear it for Frankie. Frankie with a gun to his head. I know. Frankie's dead. is lying in hell.
That was Suicide and the Frankie Teardrop. Now, that song is very similar, nearly identical, in fact, to Bob Dylan and The Battle... No, not The Battle. You don't have The Battle of Hollis Brown. It's not a place. The Ballad of Hollis Brown. Except for the fact that The Ballad of Hollis Brown is set on a farm. And this is set in a factory... slash hell, whichever way you want to bend the metaphor. There, you're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. And this is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley-Jones. Now, the next track is, I think... one of my favourite Dylan songs, actually, speaking of Bob Dylan, and it appears on Blonde on Blonde, which, incidentally, is one of my favourite Dylan albums, actually, you know, da 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 da. I think that's possibly Dylan's best Lexi. So it's, you know, one of my favourite Dylan albums, yes, I think we've got that drift now, and... also, it's got I Want You, Memphis Blues Again, and of course this track, Just Like a Woman. It's from 1966, and Dylan claims that he wrote this song in Kansas City one Thanksgiving. The Blonde on Blonde album was a cycle of songs, mostly about the changes that were happening in Dylan's life. He was cleaning house, saying farewell to old lovers and celebrating his new marriage. Just Like a Woman falls into the former category. There has been much speculation about which ex-lover Dylan was addressing in the song. Joan Baez, perhaps, although it has been suggested that Warhol starlet Edgy Sedgwick can be seen here, with her fog, her amphetamine, and her pals. Actually, I can do Dylan quite well tonight, because I've got a bit of a croaky throat, actually. Though I'm actually, you know, over the headphones and the radio and things, I'm reminding myself a bit more of John Cleese. I don't know if you're picking that up. I'm just, you know, being self-indulgent here, you know, because ultimately I'm a complete egomaniac. But enough of my personal problems. Melodically, Just Like a Woman is one of Dylan's finest. The arrangement of musicians playing against Dylan's syncopated vocal is exceptional. It was on this album that Dylan claimed he reached his ideal sound. It's that thin, wild mercury sound, he said. It's metallic and bright and gold, and whatever that conjures up, it was my particular sound. He said in 1978, when it was with the rest of the album, the musicians are Nashville Studio Cats, plus New Yorker Al Cooper, and the songs are cut pretty much live. Just Like a Woman caused some controversy on its release. It was attacked as being misogynistic, even though it's hard to see how. Actually, we did have a song that Toby Creswell states quite openly is misogynistic. It's Cold Chisel and by Goodbye Astrid, which we had a few weeks ago there, if anybody remembers that. Probably not, because I think most people's memories are a bit like mine, and my memory is quite bad, but you know. Misogynistic, here we are. Although it's hard to see how, Dylan relished Just Like a Woman, especially the way he could play with words. The version on the Concert for Bangladesh is a particularly good example of the elastic phrasing of the words and the way the tune can be teased. The song can be spiteful or compassionate depending on the circumstances of the night. Very profound there, Mr. Creswell. This is Bob Dylan and Just Like a Woman.
And her bows have fallen from her curls. She takes just like a woman. Yes, she does. She makes love just like a woman. Yes, she does. And she aches just like a woman. But she breaks just like a little. Like all the rest, with her fog, her amphetamine, and her pearls. She takes just like a woman. Yes, she makes love just like a woman. Yes, she does, and she aches just like a woman. But she breaks just like a little. Break just like a little girl.
Mr. Robert Zimmerman, ladies and gentlemen. Bob Dylan and Just Like a Woman from 1966 from the album Blonde on Blonde. You're listening to Waiheke Radio 107.4 and 88.3 FM. This is 1001 Songs, 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by Seth Titley-Jones. Seth Titley-Jones, that's me! Ha ha! Next track, The Strokes, Is This It? From 2001, appears on the album This Is It. The best thing about The Strokes' debut album is that it comes in at under 40 minutes. It runs at the same length as an LP. There is so much retro about The Strokes that they make it all sound new again, of course. They were criticised for imitating the Velvet Underground, television, the Stooges. They were moving downtown Manhattan. What the Rolling Stones had done to the South Side Chicago 30 years previously. Is This It opened the account for The Strokes with a defiant blast of New York rock. It's all wary singing from Julian Casablancas, who incidentally he wrote this song, or he has the writing credit at the top. The ruthless guitar from Albert Hammond Jr. and Nick Valenzi on sharp drums from Fabrizio Moretti. Even though at the beginning when people saw us live it was like they were so badly wanted us to bring back something from the past, said bass player Nikolai Thing. They laid every name on us, and back then it was a lot of time, and it had nothing to do with us. And people like the music for a good reason, and they see us, and they hope that it still exists. The frame of reference couldn't be more different. The Strokes are rich kids. One's dad owns a model agency and the other writes hits for Julio Iglesias, whereas the founders of the Sounds were struggling on the breadline. That said, the Strokes understand what being cool is all about. Is This It stood out at the beginning of the 21st century because almost no one else did. The Strokes and This Is It from 2001.
Is this it?
Strokes, and This Is It. I think that's a great song, actually. That, you know, it's very short and to the point, and you can sing it quite right back. I would be able to sing it if I knew the words, but it's very good. I like it personally. Sorry, I've been listening to... I went on a course this weekend, so I've been listening to this fella analysing all the songs, and so I'm beginning to do it. But no, I think that is a very good song, actually. And, you know, it's very short and to the point, which I like about it. You know, like a Mozart, Mass Mozart wrote a lot of very short to the point motets. I'm getting off track here, aren't I? That's right. You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. This is 1001 Songs, 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. I can just about say that with my eyes closed now. In fact, you can talk with your eyes closed anyway. It's quite simple. Anyway, I'm Seth Titley-Jones, and this next song is Massive Attack and Karma Coma. Massive Attack came straight out of Bristol, where the hip-hop reggae-ish blue lines melancholy, spiritually uplifting. Then came the second effort, Protection, much more downbeat and distributed as on the key track Karma Coma. I would have said that the key track of Protection was Protection, but that's just my opinion, and I respect the fact that Mr. Cresswell probably knows more than me about these things. I'm being very know-it-all-ish tonight, aren't I? Need a smack. Now I can't even remember where I was. It has a chill-out groove, but the ambience of Karma Coma is dark and sinister. The presence of Tricky as a rapper adds to the dope-filled atmosphere of the track. You just write as we think, which, and I can't be bothered doing the accent tonight, which is fragments of ideas and the images they conjure up, said 3D, who also raps on the track. You end up with the raps that are almost like streams of consciousness cut up and put back together, like William Burroughs or something. It doesn't seem to have a point, so long as there's information in there which people can retrieve if they want to. Karma Coma is built on a sly, almost comatose beat. The track is once again brilliantly embellished by Massive's hip-hop ornamentation, and the song testily critiques the slacker attitude of the blunted youth. Unsettling but seductive, Massive Attack and Karma Coma.
I seen you thinking of home, your neighborhood. You're crazy, but you're easy. I need to live in a room too. Your troubles must be seen to. See through money like it's paper, with faces I remember. I drink on a daily basis. The way Sarah calls my temper, it never calls my temper. Indossolora, sta mazza cada una rinanata. Utimba come vinta, so sce forte, ma turbenta si da già avuta. Ma non mi basta ancora. Me or not.
my baby, mate, I must be crazy. Seems swayed. You're digging a hole in the neighborhood. You're crazy, but you're lazy. Must be lazy.
Massive Attack there, and Karma Coma. You're listening to Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, are the secrets behind them. Of course, Toby Cresswell, when he wrote this book, he didn't mean that. He meant the, you know, the most influential songs of the last 100 years, but the title was too tepid and tentative for the publishers to do the thing. I really must work on this little soliloquy of mine. I do it every week. I'm Seth Tetley-Jones, and this is Waiheke Radio, and I think, yeah, it ticks all the boxes, tick, 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 tick. I don't actually, you know, write down all the boxes. You know, I'm just saying that because it's a nice metaphor, I thought. Next track, Please, 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 by James Brown, in 1966. I was working 10 hours a day for less than $100 a month, said James Brown of his first hit, Please, Please, Please. I love that song like a live one of my relatives, you know. If it wasn't that for that song, I'd still be a janitor. Recorded in Cincinnati, Ohio, in February 1956, Please, Please, Please took the gospel background and that adept vocal backing of the famous Flames doo-wop and put that in the titanic force of James Brown's personality. It was a combination of the blues. The chorus is based on the blues standard Baby Please Don't Go, doo-wop and gospel, and that sent Please, Please, Please to the top of the charts. Like a penitent and at a big words, like a penitent at a Pentecostal church, James Brown chants over and over again, going from the seductive to the desperate and then moving into some other places. He prostrates himself before the salvation of a woman's love. James is supported by the Flames, and a killer rhythm seduction is produced by Ralph Bass. Or maybe it's Rafe Bass. I don't know. I think... Oh, nope, James Brown, please, please, please.
Please, 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 please.
James Brown there with Please, Please, Please. I do like it when I said that at the beginning. You know, you say James Brown and Please, 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 and then you put it on, and then it says the exact same thing over and over again. And you think, oh, I already said that bit. But no, well, at least he didn't say the James Brown bit on the track. He's not Jason Derulo or anything. And thank goodness. Now, the next track is Cream and Spoonful. Cream introduced the extended improvisation into mainstream rock and roll. Prior to Cream's 1967 tours, extended improvisation was not an element of rock and roll music that was built around concise songs with a carefully defined structure. Extended instrumental workouts were not a part of the blues lexicon either. Improvisation was a jazz concept that required musicianship way beyond the capacity of most rock and roll bands. Once jamming became fashionable, everyone did it, whether they had the ability or not. On Wheels of Fire, Cream also introduced the drum solo, something that Cream, drummer Ginger Baker, and perhaps a dozen others have been able to carry out, but which plagued the concerts for the next 15 years. Now, that was another one of those... little things on the back of the book. I think I read them out the other day, but I won't read them out again right now. The Windsor Jazz and Blues Festival of 1966, which was our first gig, we found that we ran out of numbers so quickly we just had to improvise, said guitarist Eric Clapton. So we just made up this 12 bar blues that became Cream, and that became what we were known for, and I liked it up to a point, but that wasn't what I wanted. I can't remember what his voice is like, but I'm pretty sure it's something like that. Cream's most successful recorded jam in this version of Howling Wolf's Spoonfuls, which goes on for about 17 minutes. The three virtuosos in Cream all battle it out for the riff without disappearing. This is close to jazz logic, but with a very, very heavy arrangement. Clapton found that the live shows were losing their charm, and he noticed that the individuals were just soloing without reference to the others. One, I experimented one night, he said, "Ooh, I just stopped playing halfway through the number, and the other two didn't notice, you know, I just stood there and watched, and they carried on playing till the end of the number, and I thought, well, fuck that. You see, Cream was originally meant to be a blues trio, like Buddy Guy with a rhythm section, and I wanted to be Buddy Guy, the guitarist, with a good rhythm section. With Cream, we had our ups and our downs. We had good gigs and bad gigs. We had gigs that you could have mistaken us for Hendrix, and it was that good, yeah. And other times when we were like the worst band in the world, and it was a kind of inconsistency that relied upon the improvisation factor. All of our songs had a starting theme and a finishing theme, and the middle was up to us. On good night, it was the great, and on bad night, it was awful. I couldn't take this kind of up and down. Spoonful was recorded on a good night.
Satisfy my soul. So you're a liar. Gonna ride a crying. Everybody's lying. Everybody's fighting about her. Oh,
That was Spoonful by Cream, and this has been 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Creswell, and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley-Jones. I will be back next week at 8 p.m. on Monday nights, and of course there is my repeat on Sunday afternoons at 2 o'clock.